Welcome to the Voice Pen Purpose Podcast with author and writing coach, Amy R. Brooks.
Hi, everybody. This is Amy, and I am with Jeff Gibbard today, and he is an industry expert because he was born in Pennsylvania. Why does that make him an industry expert? It doesn't. He just told me to throw his bio out the window and talk about anything, so I am. Jeff is super cool, and he's going to help us figure out what to do after we wrote our book and how we can get other people to buy it and read it. So without further ado, hey, Jeff.
Hello there.
So I have been on Shareable, your super awesome podcast. I even interviewed you on your own podcast. So it was sliced and diced into two separate episodes. Thank you for that, by the way. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. And you were like one really awesome host slash guest.
I feel like host. You say that to everybody, but I'm going to just pretend like you just say that to me.
But even if I do, does it undermine the sincerity and truth of it? Or does it just mean that I get kick-ass guests?
You do get kick-ass guests because I've listened to your other podcast. So, and I don't mind if, you know, I've had a range of guests and everybody has different personalities. And I don't mind if somebody is a fast-talking, clever, witted fellow or female. Other people are slow talkers and they're super interesting too. So I don't know. I'll just take the compliment and run. How about that?
I think you're great. Just Thanks. Take it for what it's worth.
I think you're great. And I actually am super excited to talk about how you work with people. So I'm going to kind of put the ball in your court and have you explain specifically for authors, like, why would they call you or your office and what kind of questions? I'm always curious, like, what kind of questions people ask you when they're looking to work with you?
Yeah. So I'll give you kind of the 30-second bio of me professionally and why I'm likely on your show, aside from the fact that we have incredible podcast chemistry. But I think so I have an agency called True Voice Media right here in sunny Philadelphia. And we are a social media content marketing and influencer marketing agency. And we help companies of all sizes and even individuals who are trying to figure out how exactly they can social media, which is pretty much how they generally phrase the question. How I can social media? How does Twitter? So, you know, we're really
much work to be done there.
Let's start here with what is Facebook? Okay. So we work with people, whether they're kind of coming to us as a pure beginner or somebody that has an agency or a company or whatever that has at least taken the first steps and is looking to get better and more refined in how they use social media content and influencer marketing. So when we work with individuals, entrepreneurs, speakers, authors, it's slightly different than, say, working with the medical malpractice insurance firm or working with a hospital or working with, you know, a financial advisory or a summer camp. So it's every one of those is different. But what we do is we identify the challenges that they're up against given their unique circumstance and then help them solve it. So when an author contacts us, they're saying, well, I need to build an audience so that when I release my book, people actually know that it exists and that I have some sort of a tribe that understands and appreciates what my perspective is. And, you know, at least there's some sort of a pre-launch momentum going with it. And then they're also trying to figure out how they can continue to grow that. And then after the book, turn that book into the next phase, which, as you know, most people that write a book aren't just trying to write a book and be done. They may be trying to write multiple books or go on a speaking circuit or sell an online course or do something, you know? So we help them kind of bridge that gap and design the strategies.
That's so important. And I know when I've worked with people, it's asking them the right questions and then they can think in terms of what feels good. So some people freak out about being on camera. But then when I say radio podcast, like you can see them relax a little bit. But it's just asking those questions like, I don't want to be in front of people. Well, if you're in your pajamas at home on a podcast, does that count? And they're like, no, actually, that feels good. So do you have lots of different offerings for people who want to go out versus stay in? Or do you do a lot based on people's comfort level? Or are you just like, look it, if you want to be seen, you got to go in all the places where all the people are?
I mean, I'll throw in the tough love when I have to, but generally speaking, I think the most difficult part of implementing a strategy is behavior change. So it's very difficult to get people to change their behaviors dramatically. You can probably inch them along bit by bit, but it's real difficult if I have somebody who's like a super introvert and really doesn't like leaving the house, and their big thing is they just want to like write their book and like, you know, go about their day. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really tough for me to tell them they need to start going and doing a daily video blog or something. So,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So the first thing is to understand who I'm dealing with and what their personality is like, what they're most comfortable with, how they currently use the internet, how they currently think about promoting themselves. And then we try to build something that as much as possible fits into who they are and how they currently operate with as minimal behavior changes as possible.
I like that a lot. I'm sure listeners, you guys are like, oh, I want to work with Jeff. He won't make me get out of my pajamas if I don't want to. What about...
I encourage pajamas. I am a big fan of pajamas.
I upgrade to like yoga pants. I always try to be dressed by the time my kids get off the bus. That's my goal. So
this is a total non sequitur, and this is not like a tremendous value bomb I'm about to drop here, but I will say that for men who feel like I can't get away with wearing pajamas out, I have something for you. There is a store called Uniqlo, and they make, and I'm sure there's other people that make it or other companies that make this, but they make sweatpant jeans. I swear to you, they look like jeans. They look just like jeans, but they are sweatpants. And I would be lying to you if I told you I was not wearing them right now.
Oh my gosh. It sounds like jeggings, like the jean leggings.
That's what I initially thought. But I tell you, you can't distinguish them from actual jeans. So if you're kind of trying to do that like casual jeans with a blazer thing, I have a cotton blazer too. So it's pretty much like wearing like pajamas that look like a, you know, kind of a dressed up jeans look. It's amazing.
It's all relative. I keep getting distracted. Every time you talk, my computer monitor is saying Batman is talking. So I need you to know that that's also not relevant to our conversation. But every time it's like talking Batman, I'm like,
I do that at Starbucks too. Every time I go to Starbucks, they say, what's the name for the cup? I say Batman. And that works out real nice. It's great. Every time they call my name at the end, they're like, cold brew for Batman. I go, shh, I have enemies everywhere.
Oh my gosh. I love it. Ugh. Yep. All right. So back to, I had a question about, I've had clients who don't want to be on social media at all, and it's hard for me to know what to tell them to bridge the gap. So here's my question. I don't think it's as effective to pay somebody to do your posting for you. I think there's some heart and soul that gets expressed. People private message you and you can be really responsive and like a real human and light of Facebook bots and all the other things that can be automated. There's still something about like having a spontaneous tweet or having something that's like from the heart. Do you encourage people? Like, do you do tutorials where you show them, oh, look how easy it is, and you walk them through the steps, and then they can feel empowered and do it themselves? Or you're just like, we'll do it.
I mean, in general, I agree with you that outsourcing your voice is generally not a great idea. I don't believe in it. It's not really my thing. We offer it. Sometimes it is helpful or appropriate as a transitionary phase. Sometimes it's good when you're speaking strictly from like a brand perspective, but as a human being, outsourcing your voice is a terrible idea. And the reason my company is called True Voice Media is because I actually believe in people using their true, authentic, and real voice, which is part of the reason why I don't like to push people into doing social activities or marketing activities that are far outside of who they are as people. If you're introverted, you probably don't belong on video. If you're not a great writer, you probably shouldn't be, well, you probably shouldn't be writing a book, but if you're not a great, but if you're not a great writer, I'm probably going to tell you to go on podcasts, or I'm going to tell you to go on, you know, and do videos. So I try to work with people and who they are. And I think as far as outsourcing your voice, generally not something that I advise, but when I come upon someone who's like, I just don't want to do social media, I will take that at face value and say, okay, that's fine. You don't need social media to survive and thrive in this day and age. You don't need it. It is helpful though. It would be very difficult to do it without it, but it's possible. So what I look for are, what are some of those ways that we can do it without putting somebody out where they have to constantly be tweeting something clever or something like that? And oftentimes the easiest kind of first step is, well, let's look at social advertising, because that's something where you can create a piece of content once and continually use it over and over and basically pay Facebook or Twitter to keep promoting that and showing it to the right people.
That makes sense. I was even thinking like a Facebook page or just having some pretty standard, it just wouldn't have the same vibe as another one where people are doing Facebook Live or you know, video clips and things like that. It would just feel different, but it's not, it's better than nothing too. That's the other thing I was thinking about when I look on Facebook for someone and I can't find them. My reaction is not to get off Facebook and go look on another platform. It's not. Like if I'm on Facebook, I'm looking for you and you're not there, I'll move on to something else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of like if you Google someone and you can't find them using Google, like what's your next move? You're not going to turn to the Yellow Pages.
Yeah. Yeah. No, ours don't come in the house. Like the Yellow Pages show up at the front door and I walk them around to the recycling bin. Like they don't come in the house. So yeah.
Well, I still like them because I'm very short. So it helps me to see above the dinner table.
Prop them up on your chair. That's adorable, Batman. Exactly. All right. So the idea of not using social media is kind of blowing my mind right now, but I do like the idea of having a presence on those places. What do you think about the juxtaposition of like the old and the new? So how do you feel about press releases?
I actually really like everything that is old. I don't necessarily think that they're always the right decision, but I think as budgets increase and you have, you know, you've kind of exhausted, let's say, your Facebook ads, then it makes sense to go to something like a press release. But it also depends on your industry. It depends on who you're mm-hmm. trying to reach. It depends on, you know, there's so many different factors before I would recommend a particular tactic. You know, but it's sort of like when I talk to a prospect and they say, well, you know, we want to be good at social media. And I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? And they're like, well, do you want to sell more? Do you want to grow your audience size? And if you grow your audience size, you know, what's the purpose of it? So it's always about making sure that whatever the business objective is that you're trying to, you're measuring the right thing. So if you're looking to generate sales, don't count your likes. If you're looking to grow your network size, don't count sales. So in the same way, I would say a press release is a great idea if you're trying to reach journalists and press outlets and raise awareness in traditional publications and probably have some boost in your SEO. Otherwise, if you're trying to actually engage people one-to-one or find your audience, there are probably better ways to go about it. Mm-hmm. But I will say this though. I think that just to the point of like, you know, kind of more traditional marketing, I think a lot of the traditional marketing is making a comeback. And I think the first one that I'm seeing that's really making a comeback is print. And the reason why is that because there's less and less print, it gives you an opportunity, instead of just sending out like thousands and thousands and thousands of postcards, you could send out 200 pieces of very beautiful, finely crafted printed materials that people don't want to throw away. And I think there's a huge opportunity there. So if you were an author, for instance, let's use that because I know that's your audience. Mm-hmm. If you're an author and you want people to review your book or you want people to read your book and tell others about it, send them a beautifully gift wrap package of the first chapter of your manuscript, of the actual book itself. Send them the first chapter and then put a little card in there where they can go and they can get their copy and possibly even sign up to be an affiliate to sell copies of your book through Amazon or something. That's the sort of thing I'm talking about. Like really think it out. How can you make an impact on someone where when they get that piece of mail or that piece of printed material that it looks so nice that they have to open it first and foremost. And that when they see it, they're like, wow, somebody put a lot of time and money into sending this to me. I'm not going to throw this out. Those are the sort of pieces I think that make an actual impact as opposed to the sort of spray and pray approach of mm-hmm. yesteryear where it was basically like, well, you know, how many percentages of people can I get to actually look at this thing if I send out hundreds of thousands of them?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think you want to stand out and then you end up coming up with these, I don't know. It feels like some of the titles to the email need to be really over the top so that they pop, or I don't know. I like the idea of staying true to what feels aligned with your message instead of just trying to get the click.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about authenticity and it's all about, you know, quality over quantity in most cases, especially if you're a smaller player. You know, if you have tons of budget, then you can, you know, Coca-Cola never asks you to buy a Coke in any of their ads because they're Coca-Cola. They don't have to. They know if you want one, you'll go find one. But if you're just an author, single author, maybe first time author, you know, you really have to focus on getting your tribe of people that actually really deeply care. And that means that you have to focus on quality over quantity. You can't just mass send out an email to thousands of people that you barely lightly know. You're better off taking that time and sending out 10 to 15 really tight emails to people that you know that are actually handcrafted and trying to get those people to help engage others and let them know about what you're working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've heard, you just reminded me of people who budget their day and they write 2 handwritten notes a day. And so there are certain practices that I think really blend well with the technology. So you can do a selfie with your book and you can write something clever. And then you can also handwrite a note to a change maker or an industry insider with, I don't have a problem sending out my books sometimes because if you get them in bulk when you self-publish, it's a few dollars sometimes depending on the size of the book. And depending on what you're looking to do or if you go meet in person, I always have one on me. I always encourage people to do that. I'm like, just keep them in your car. I've had people say like, oh, I'd love to see it. Like I meet somebody who's influential or who is interested and I say, oh, great. I have one in the car. I'll be right back. And I like go get it. I don't necessarily carry it around all the time, but if my purse is big enough, but now these are good problems. I have too many books, so I can't carry around like 4 books in my purse all the time. I used to have 1 and yeah. So that's an interesting old school approach. What other things do you wish that people would do before the book comes out? Other than like creating a following, what other things? And one that I'm leaning towards is I always encourage people to book gigs because it takes so long. Like sometimes it's 6 months out. So if you wait until the book comes out, then you're not going to have that appearance or event for 6 more months. It's like a real lag time.
Yeah. I mean, in my world, most of the things that I'm going to be encouraging people to do is about building the brand before the book hits. Because it's sort of like, have you ever discovered a musician and like on their 3rd album, and then you go back and look at the early part of their catalog, you're like, oh, wow, I want to listen to their early stuff. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing is true being an author, is if you just come out of nowhere, you've never talked about this particular thing. There's no remnants of you anywhere on the web talking about this particular topic. You don't really have any momentum going into it, and you also don't really have any cred in that particular topic area, unless, you know, you've been on the speaking circuit or like you've right. got 20 years in industry and like your name is well known. But I really do believe that a lot of it is about building that tribe before and building that momentum around whatever your brand and message is. So I would encourage a lot of blogging. I would encourage a lot of, you know, going on people's podcasts and acting as if the book is already written and already out. And just continuing to talk about the topics that are in it, because one way or another, the book is going to come out, right? Whether you self-publish it or go through a publisher, that book is coming out. It's got the concepts that are already in it. So I would suggest going around and just acting as if it's already out. Like my book is only, you know, 15,000 words in, but I'll tell anybody all about the book and I'll tell them what it's about and what's going to be in it because I've got the whole outline and I'm happy to go on and talk about it now on a podcast or on mm-hmm. a blog. And I would suggest anybody that's trying to become an author to do something like that, because then when it comes out, it's going to fit that same narrative that you've been building over time.
Absolutely. And 2 things that I thought of while you're saying that was one, those are the fear points. So people are thinking, what if it's not done? And then 2, speaking as if is scary to people because they feel like they're lying. So touching on those a little bit more, I think that you mentioned about having a really tight outline. If you are clear on the scope and message and your general timeline, that's what you speak on. You don't have to lie and say it's already out. I know you said about like pretending like it's already out, but you don't have to say like, oh, it's already out. You can't find it. Look harder. Like you're not doing that, but you are going out and you're speaking about what you already wrote and what you're currently writing. And then you can also speak to what you're going to write. I think this sounds like a computer part, but I am an external processor. So when I talk about things, it helps me with my clarity. And I really like getting feedback on ideas, preferably before they're in print. So this can actually be a tactic to improve your book by getting kind of hearing feedback. When I was on your podcast and I was giving you feedback on the title, The Lovable Leader, and we were talking about the perception that it was not a traditional patriarchal top-down message, that it was inclusive of women and it was going to be a different We had a little back and forth. Did you find that to be helpful, or were you like annoyed that we were talking about something that wasn't done? Like, what was your take?
No, I'm 100% with you about sort of external processing. I mean, I think that anybody who's an author, whether they've published or not, they're already an author. It's just the book is already written in their head. The only difference between the author that actually publishes and that which doesn't is the author that actually goes through the time and energy to actually publish and go through the process of writing the book and publishing it. So the book is already in your head, but it's not fully formulated until it's on paper and out the door. So I think having that conversation for me is part of the process of being an author. It's having those conversations and going through it and letting it change my perception. And I can't remember exactly what it was that came out of that conversation, but I do remember that I wrote a new chapter heading as a result of the conversation that you and I had. So I guess the point being is that I see that my book is already written, but it's being written. You know what I mean? So I talk about it in that way as if it's present tense. It's, you know, it's going to be coming out. It's a certainty. And that also kind of puts me on the hook to make sure that I do put it out because I've now put it out into the world on podcasts and in blogs that I will be writing this book and that it will be coming out and it has a title and here are the sections. So I don't know. I think there's a little bit of accountability in that, which I think is probably would be scary for people.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you're not like everybody else. I am with you where I like having a certain level of pressure and accountability. Did you like school? Like when you had an assignment due and then you got a grade on it?
Blech, hated
it. No. Okay, good. I loved it. So the idea, like there are some people that I say, do you like homework? And even when I work with people, I say to them, can you please give me homework? Because talking about general ideas all over the place, like I really like it when I get, my husband and I just before recording this, we were on a walk and I was like, I need to know what our action steps are. And I need to know like with super clarity. So even if you have different personalities, you could benefit from the strategy or different likes and dislikes around deadlines. You could benefit from the strategy of just speaking something into existence. And I know that a lot of people that I work with are afraid. They straight up say, I'm too scared to tell anybody about the book until it's done. And then when it's done, I can claim it. Well, by then, I think it was you and I, we talked about before, somebody recently about, you know, you don't announce that you're pregnant after the baby's born and you're like, surprise, there's a baby. You know, generally there's like some lead up and people can mentally prepare. Give people the chance to mentally prepare for you becoming an author and the shift will happen. Even if they think it's weird at first, like what you, huh? I didn't know you wanted to write a book. How long do you want to do that? Like, that's okay. If people say, assume people will say that. That's normal. It's a normal thing.
100%. And I'll say this, and I know this is not everybody, but I've done a number of different podcasts now where this same kind of theme keeps coming up. So I think it's natural for me to say it again. But I did an episode of Nice Guys on Business where the episode title was Using Fear as Fuel. And I did another podcast with Johnny Naster called Hack the Entrepreneur where it was about going all in on a project. Mm-hmm. So my default way of operating is that when I do something, I go all in on it. And I use whatever fear I have about doing that project, whether it's writing the book or whether it's about, you know, not being able to generate enough business. I use that fear to fuel me to actually go do it. I in my head think that everybody is doubting my ability to do it. And my sole goal in life is to prove every single one of them wrong.
That's totally me too. But do you think other people are like that?
I don't necessarily know. I don't think most people are, but here's the thing. I think, you know, Michael Jordan was known, for being one of the fiercest competitors in all of sports. And one of the things that is kind of legendary about him is that he would make up stories about his opponents and what they said about him or about his, about his mother or about, like he would make up, he would invent stories to make him angry so that he fueled himself to win. And I'm not saying that's a good idea or a bad idea. It's just interesting that one of the world's fiercest competitors and most accomplished athletes chose to do something like that. You know, I look at other athletes like Tom Brady was a fifth round draft pick and, you know, he's played as if everybody was doubting his ability to win at all. And he's one of the winningest quarterbacks in history. Whether you think he's a cheater or not. So anyway, I think, you know, if you go out into the world as a soon to be author and you talk to people as if you're, it's a certainty that you will be writing this book, you're going to motivate yourself to do that so that so that you're not making yourself a liar. And I realize that's confronting, but that's my suggestion, is just to do it, jump into it.
Yeah, that's definitely a personal philosophy that we share. And it's funny because I've said to my husband before, like, yeah, and you said da 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 da, and I did it anyway. And he's like, I don't think I said that. Like, I kind of like elaborate. I think there's like a nugget, and then I like you said, like build a whole thing around it. But I got that from my dad, because my dad would be like, oh, there's not enough time. Oh, you can't do it. And in my head, I'd be like, watch me. And that's where I do worry sometimes, that it's a specific personality trait that, not saying it can't be replicated, but I try not to assume that everybody thinks like I do. So
I mean, I assume nobody does. Like, yeah. I assume that like I'm of a 1% group of people that are insane enough to use fear as fuel.
Yeah,
but it works.
Interesting
for me.
Though. It's well, and it's one of those things that I feel like when I hear an idea that either does or doesn't resonate with me, it's irrelevant. It changes the way I think about things. So even if it doesn't resonate with me, it makes me wonder about what my options are, because I had a certain set of options that were at my disposal. And now you're giving me another option, like, oh, I can be badass. Like, oh, I did not realize this. Like, I am going to go out. And I encourage women in particular, there's always a fine line. I don't want to become what we criticize in men when we say about machismo or overconfidence or arrogance or things like that. But man almighty, it's so interesting to go out and listen to men and women talk, and how apologetic women are in just general discourse, and how they downplay or deflect. And if you can start to raise your level of awareness around that in other people, and start noticing how men speak in maybe declarative statements, or, and not every man and not every woman does it, I know that. But it has been an interesting experiment for me. And I've been around women who are to the point where I do think they represent some of the things I don't like in a stereotypical, you know, arrogant man. And so anyway, the point is, I think that these tools are super important, and that's where in confidence can be fostered. And that's ultimately what you're talking about, is having confidence to do something you've never done before, having confidence to do things that other people doubt you can do, having confidence to claim a title that previously was not yours, and that would be authorship.
Yeah, and I think in addition to the confidence, or maybe related to the confidence, is shedding the fear by embracing the fear. So I listened to a podcast with Tim Ferriss, where he talked about the power of negative thinking. And I started doing this recently, and I think it's a really helpful exercise, because I came upon a couple situations where I was like really scared about the outcome. Like, some things went on with my business, and I was like, oh man, like this could be the worst thing that ever happened. Mm-hmm. And I started having these visions of being like homeless, like legitimately, like I was like, this is going to be the worst thing that ever happened. I'm going to go bankrupt. Like, life is going to be awful. So I kind of started ruminating on these things and getting like really upset about it. I listened to his podcast, just happened to listen to it. And he talked about the power of negative thinking. That is to explore the worst case scenario, like really try it on, go all the way deep, 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 deep down that rabbit hole. So you're an author, you go on a podcast, you tell people that you're going to write a book. What's the worst thing that could happen, right? So then you start going through your head. You say, well, what if I don't write the book? Okay. Well, what if you don't write the book? What happens? Well, I have all these people to apologize to. Okay. So then what? Well, then you just, and you keep going down that whole thing. And by the end of going through that whole thing, one, you realize it's unlikely that the worst case scenario will happen. And two, you try it on and you realize it doesn't feel like, life will go on. It's like a cold shower. It's going to be really uncomfortable, and you're not going to like it, and you're going to be upset about it, but you'll probably survive. So unless you're dealing with matters of life and death, the end, it's going to be fine at the end of it. So you don't write the book. So you write a different book, or you don't write a book at all. You go about your life. It's going to be fine.
I think that's interesting. I always say, you know, if people say like, if it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. All right. Right. I like to just cut to the chase and like, you won't die, because a lot of people that I work with, a lot of first time authors, they are paralyzed with the fear. And so then we have to go and do the fork of the road. Like, if you try it and it's stinky, or if you don't try at all, like, how are you going to feel in 6 months from now, knowing that you wasted time and money and you didn't make the progress. And I really like the idea of the cold shower and the worst case scenario. I mean, those two things make a lot of sense to me. And when you go down the path of worst case scenario, and then you realize you don't die, something in your, for me anyway, it clicks in my head and says, let's go for it. But I had the conversation about moving to Costa Rica, and I started telling people, and my mom said, well, what if you decide not to go? And I said, well, then we won't go. And she's like, but you've told so many people. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I there's a certain part of me that, like, I can't think, it's not that I don't mind or like whatever. It's like, I don't care that I told somebody I'm doing something and then I changed my mind. Like, it's my life. And when people say that about like other folks' spouses or anything, like, oh, well, he's X, Y, Z, I have to live with him and I really like my spouse. So, you know, it's at the end of the day, you got to live your life and you're the one stuck with it 24 hours a day. So if you go for broke and you fail, trust and believe, a lot of people are watching you. A lot of people come out of the woodwork, say, I've been watching you, Amy, for years. Years? Really? What? We haven't talked. And I know, Jeff, that's true for you. Where people ever pop up and say, like, yeah, I've been following what you've been doing. You're like, really? I haven't heard from you.
It still shocks me to this day. Like right before we got on this podcast, somebody walked by my studio and was like, hey, so this guy came up and he was like looking in your studio and like you weren't here. And he said that he's been listening to your show for a while. And I was like, what's his name? And she said his name. I was like, I have no idea who that is. Yeah. So it was kind of cool that like just random people stumble upon your stuff or like you've got, you know, these people that are, you know, fans of what you do. And I think that's kind of nice, you know, that like we're in an era where if you're passionate about something, you can go out there and you can talk about it. And some people are going to like it and some people are not. And I think that's the other big thing, right? Is that I think one of the fears that many people have about going out there and building that audience and putting themselves out there is like, what if somebody doesn't like it? Oh, well, who cares?
Yeah.
So what if somebody doesn't like it? Do you like everybody? No, of course not. Mm-hmm. So let people not like you. And honestly, if you don't have a couple of people that don't like you, that means you're not taking enough chances. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, nobody is universally liked by every single person in the world, at least not to my knowledge. So shed the fear of that.
Like Mother Teresa, though.
To be honest, there are people out there that have plenty of things to say about Mother Teresa.
That's terrible. I don't want to talk about that anymore. That makes me feel bad. All right. Yeah. So even but Mother Teresa has haters. That's like out of That could be the title of this episode. Y'all, even Mother Teresa has haters.
That's a great title for the episode. I applaud that.
With Jeff Gibbard.
I'm not a hater of Mother Teresa. I don't know enough to judge.
Well, the idea that I have a friend, she's a copywriter, business coach, and she said, I want people to leave my mailing list, to unsubscribe. I want to be so distinctive that people either love me or hate me. I don't want everyone to be like, oh, that's nice. She's like, I want to have raving fans and people who are like, nah, it's not really for me, and make a choice. I want to encourage people to take an action. I want to motivate them one way or another. And every time she's talked about this with me a few times, and every time she says it, it hits me a different way depending on the day. But there are definitely people that I've worked with that I feel really passionate about their message, but I also know that it's not going to land. And I've written books where people have emailed me, you know, concerned that I'm literally going to go to hell. And I'm at a point now where I'm like, I would not say that because the one person thought I'm going to hell. Like, I don't believe in hell, so don't worry about me, mama. But the idea of kind of staking your claim and having some level of differentiation from others is very exciting to me. I think in a world where there's a lot of homogenization and a lot of sterilization and fast food, you know, homogeny on the horizon, it's fun to see like a really cool different restaurant. It's fun to see a really cool different artist. And you notice when those guys are successful because you're like, wow, they took a risk. They did something different. And they were, in a sense, rewarded for it. Some people just give props because they took a risk. They might not even like that cuisine or that type of music, but they're like, you know what? Shout out to her for doing her thing.
Yeah. I mean, and I think partly that's a sign of the times, right? Like we have these little glass covered rectangles that we carry in our pocket that give us access to all of the world's information. And as a result, we have the ability to see so many different things that we would otherwise be unexposed to. So we begin to notice patterns and we see things that feel and look the same. So, and I think that's a challenge for today's author because you feel this, well, it's already been said, right? Like I'm writing a book on leadership. What hasn't been said about leadership, right? Yeah. Right? Like it, and that's not unique from anybody that's listening to this, whatever topic you're writing about, I'm sure you're thinking, well, so many people have already written about it. You know, whether you're writing a mystery novel or a romance novel, or you're writing a self-help book or a book about, you know, SEO and content optimization, like somebody's written about it, but that doesn't mean that your unique take that you have on it doesn't make it different, or that you can't say the exact same thing, but in a way that makes more sense to people. One of the things that people often say about working with us is that we allow them to understand what's happening. We simplify it enough that they understand what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we're saying a lot of the same things that other people are. We just happen to say it better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where there's an argument for niche writing or any kind of business focus. I have a very antagonistic thing I do with people when we first start working together, when I ask them who their audience is and they say everyone, and I'm like, wrong answer. Like we're not doing that. Like, and I know for me, I don't read a ton of books that are for everyone. Like I like to pick up the book. The book that I'm reading right now, listen to this awesome title. Let's give her a shout out. It's called Writing as a Way of Healing: How Telling Our Stories Transforms Our Lives, Louise DeSalvo. And I picked it up. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so super specific to what I want to learn, like right this second. If she just written the title, like writing is good for you, or writing, like I love the fact that it's super scientific and it's super nano focused on specific ways you can write to transform your mental and emotional health. And that's awesome. And I would encourage anybody to step into your uniqueness, which I haven't always done. I mean, there's certain parts of us that we make ourselves palatable to broader audiences just by existing, you know, just like traversing the world. And we know how to smile and wave, and we know how to, you know, shake hands in a way that's comfortable for people and dress in a way that's not. I did see women who have outfits made out of duct tape today. So I was like, that's unique. I don't know how you go to the bathroom. But the idea that you can do something that's like distinctly you and stand out but not sell out, I think it's a really interesting path to take too, to really own all the different sides of you. And that gets people excited to own all the different sides of themselves too.
Yeah, totally down with it. Be yourself, do your thing.
And that's going to be a branding philosophy, I think, for me now. Moving forward, it's just kind of, don't worry about being too complicated for people. I think a lot of folks are ready for it based on all the things you were just saying about the overexposure to people are looking for differences just to like make sense of things. Do you agree? Like from a branding perspective, if you look too much like everybody else, it's going to be confusing or hard for them to make a decision.
I agree with that. But I think that also to brand yourself is not as difficult as I think people make it feel. Mm. So I don't know if that's going to be like a controversial statement, but here's my philosophy on like personal branding.
Ooh,
just
good.
be yourself. The one thing that you have that is uniquely and distinctly different from everyone else is that you're you. And like I wear jeans and a t-shirt almost every single day. Do you think I'm the only person in the world to wear jeans and a t-shirt? No. I also wear bright red sneakers. So that's something I wear, not because I was like, ooh, I'm going to wear bright red sneakers, but because I'm a little flashy and I like it. So I didn't think about that as a branding decision. I just liked it. So I started wearing it. I also love Spider-Man and like comic book stuff. So now people know that I like that. When I go to Starbucks, I put Batman on the cup. So people know that. Like I just do things that I like and I am me and that is my brand. And I think that if more people had the courage to embrace who they are and just do what they love and not worry so much about what other people think, they would find that they have their own brand and it is beautiful. And not only that, but they really like that brand because it's them. And I think that that's a very non-traditional way to talk about personal branding, because I think personal branding has become this conversation about inventing yourself instead of discovering yourself. And I personally am more along the lines of know who you are and then tell people about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's easy to maintain.
Yeah. Like I don't have to really think about this. I just kind of do it, which makes it easier.
And, you know, it's funny because my husband comes up in a lot of podcasts because I'll just mention him. And I think that our relationship is part of big part of my brand. And then the other day I had my kid on a Facebook Live. Yesterday I accidentally started crying when I did something. And I was like, you know, and I told my kids at dinner last night, and my oldest son, he goes, oh my gosh, mom, you always cry. Like, why do you do that? And I'm going to be like, it's part of my brand. Like, it's part of who I am. Like I read books in bed with my kids and I cry when I talk about certain things. And it's not because I'm sad. It's just because I get verklempt, I get overwhelmed. So anyway, that's really a great message for people to hear. So I want everybody to remember that, you know, you already are living your brand. It's just a matter of if you are sharing that too. You know, you don't have to have the sanitized, what did you say, like created.
Yeah, like you, I think the way I said it, I think was you don't have to invent yourself. You have to discover yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know what, to be honest, this is, that's personal branding, but in the conversation around companies, generally, you know, no amount of social media is going to help a company that sucks. So you have to kind of go back to the beginning and discover like, what's your core? What are you here for? What's your message? What's your meaning? And whether you're a company, an author, whatever it is, you have to kind of go back and figure out what that is. And once you have that, then you can start marketing that. But if the core of it is broken, if you're a company with bad customer service, for instance, it doesn't matter what I say on social media, your customer service sucks. So fix the customer service. Don't fix the how you message on social media and content marketing to try and fool people into thinking your customer service doesn't suck. Your customer service sucks. So fix your customer service. At the same time, for your personal brand, don't try and invent something that you're not so that you have a brand around that. Instead, become that brand. Be that you want to be. Embrace that. Embrace who you are and then tell people about that instead of trying to manufacture something that isn't real. And again, to your point, it's much easier to maintain that because there's no lying. It's just what it is. And you're just talking about it and it's real. And there's a congruency to what you say you are versus what other people say you are. And when there's an overlap there, you have something that's really, really profound and beautiful. And if you don't have that, then you basically just have a disconnect and, you know, doesn't matter what you do.
Mm-hmm. And the people that I'm most drawn to don't have a lot of comparitis. They're not, I can tell that they're not like constantly looking at what other people are doing and then like incorporating what's working. Cause that happens a lot too, where people kind of see like, oh, so-and-so is successful with X, Y, and Z and their branding style. And then they incorporate it. I think the people that I'm most drawn to are pretty distinctive and it doesn't seem like they're gleaning all of these aspects from other folks. It just seems like you said, that's just who they are. And that makes me very comfortable. It actually, all of that, I think subconsciously is speaking to us and telling us that they're more trustworthy because they're being honest. So in all aspects of their presentation.
Yeah. I'm all for studying the strategies and tactics of others. And, you know, thinking about how you can apply intelligent systems to your own life. But as far as defining who you are, you know, that's not, there's no destination there. It's more of a journey, but, you know, the more you understand who you are and what you bring to the table and you bake that into how you brand yourself out in the world, you know, the easier personal branding is going to be for you. So when you go out to try and promote your book, just, you know, you have to first make sure that, you know, you've written a topic that you can actually talk about. And then when you go out and talk about it, that you feel comfortable talking about it because it's your thing. So as long as you have that, there's nothing to really fear. Just, you know, go out there and be yourself and talk about what you're passionate about.
I love it. I feel like we covered a lot of nuggets. Do you have any last takeaways or any last nuggets that you want people to take away that you're like, ah, I wish every author knew this. Why don't they know this?
I don't. I don't really know what else I would tell an author other than just like keep writing. And I'd say probably the biggest thing would be leverage the help of others. Like it's not easy to write a book and it's certainly not easy to like come up with all the ideas yourself. Like you really got to bounce off of people. And I think when writing your book, like I can only speak really from a nonfiction perspective, just speaking now as an author rather than as a marketing consultant. you know, I think it's very difficult to write about a topic in a bubble without, you know, talking to people about what their pain points are and what they're really feeling. So, you know, I'm writing a book about leadership. I got to talk to people who really anybody that's been in a situation where they are either a leader themselves or they have had good leaders or they've had bad leaders. It's, you know, it's important for me to get that real world feedback from them so that I can incorporate that and make the book that's most valuable for real people. So I would say, you know, don't be afraid to talk to people about what you're doing. You don't need to like lock yourself away in a cabin and write your grand novel. I think that it's really important to talk to people to give perspective. And then at the same time, to have the confidence to not take everybody's suggestions and incorporate them. You know, like I think it's nice to bounce off of them, but you don't have to like write your book paint by number according to what people tell you. But I do think it's important that you balance, you know, being away in that log cabin writing your novel and taking everybody's suggestion. I think you just have to, you kind of have to be part of the world as you're writing it.
I love that. I've counseled writers. I was like, you know, if somebody says something that you don't agree with and you don't like, you don't have to use it. And then I always add, and you don't have to tell them either. You don't have to be like, thanks so much. I hate that idea. Like just say, oh, thanks. And like keep it moving. Because once you get in flow with that, you're going to start having a lot of really interesting interactions and just receive, just let it wash over you. And if something resonates, you're like, oh, great idea. Go tweak your chapter. If something doesn't, let it keep on moving, like let it slide on by. And you don't need to debate with people at all. You are the boss of your book. You don't have to debate with people what is going to end up in the book. Tell them to write their own freaking book if they get too territorial. Just know that you're allowed to take opinions and do with them what you will.
Exactly.
Said me, said Jeff, it's official. So that was some good last minute tips there for a guy who said he didn't have anything.
Well, I always got a little bit of something left in the tank.
Yeah, you're like, let me shake it up real quick and see what comes up.
Exactly.
One last nugget. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Jeff. And can you tell everybody your company one last time? And I'm going to put in the show notes too, so they can reach out. And you work with folks all over. They don't have to be in the Philadelphia area.
I work with people all over the place. So the company is True Voice Media. We're super easy to find on the internets. We're on all of the different social media channels. We write a really awesome blog. We're about to release season two of our True Voice Media TV, we just answer a bunch of different questions. They're real short form videos, like 60 seconds or less a piece. And we just answer questions about social media for people. So that's really exciting. So that's truevoicemedia.com. The podcast is Shareable, and you can find that on any podcast platform or just go to shareablepodcast.com.
Ooh. That's a lot of stuff, y'all. I hope you check them out. And I like Shareable so much because it gets normal people and then also geniuses and everybody in between talking about technology and human interaction. So I think that's really important, especially as you take your book out into the world and smash up against all the high-tech options that are before you.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Find me, Amy R. Brooks, at voicepenpurpose.com. You can leave comments and reviews on the podcast. You can share it with other people. And just remember that you need to identify your voice, pick up your pen, so you can step into your purpose. And until next time, write on.